In 2013, I was part of a group of people who sat down to talk and envision what a fish research program would look like in the Chehalis River. And at the time, there was a fair amount of interest in improving the basin, and there was a lot of modeling that was occurring to suggest how we might improve it. And what we saw was what was missing was actually information from the basin, from the species in the basin, to inform those efforts. And so a lot of the work that you have heard this morning is an effort to provide information from the Chehalis River to inform the work that we're doing there, and to support the work that we're doing there. And this work has been, although we've, you know, heard from Department of Fish and Wildlife staff, the overall work in the Chehalis Basin has been multi-agency. We've had the support of local tribal leaders, investment by the legislature, and we're moving much more to a place where we can say we have some understanding, and we can put we have a system that we now have information. We can talk about it in a way that we say we think this is connected to this is connected to this, and that's important. I think the other thing to point out this morning is that what you have heard this morning is also the result of both the expertise as well as the creativity of a number of staff at the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And bringing that team together to invest in the basin has also been part of the process of bringing information to bear. So our goal and our role as an agency within the Chehalis Basin strategy, there are several different roles. The role that you have heard this morning focuses around generating data from the Chehalis Basin to inform the restoration planning. And so we're doing this, as Marie was pointing out, most of the talks today were on salmon and steelhead, but we are intentionally focusing more broadly on native fish diversity as a whole. Overall, my talk got flipped. what you've heard this morning puts the Chehalis River ecosystem in a context of diversity. It's not a linear if A, then B, then C. Actually, we're talking about a basin that is incredibly diverse with respect to temperature, with respect to flow, and this supports the diversity of fish species as well as amphibian species that you'll hear about this afternoon. It supports a diversity of life histories that will provide these species resiliency to climate change in the future, as well as to any flooding or large events that might happen in any given year. And also, we've heard that there's substantial genetic diversity within the basin, although this differs among species. So I have two themes I wanted to highlight for you to walk away with here. One is that I think we can say with confidence that we have provided data to inform the existing models, and that that information has increased over time, and certainly since the original planning and vision of this work in 2013. So for example, we are working toward a much better understanding of chum abundance in the basin, for which the modeling has been particularly challenging because there was limited information, as well as the distribution of chum within the basin. We've identified summer holding habitat in areas for spring Chinook salmon, again, a species of great concern within the basin with respect to how what is the current status and what will be the status in the future. We've greatly increased the basin-wide temperature information, as John Winkowski presented just a few talks ago, and the availability of information from the Chehalis to inform temperature modeling within the Chehalis Basin. We're developing salmonid temperature habitat relationships that are specific to the Chehalis Basin. And depth and velocity requirements for native fish species, as Marie Winkowski just presented, again, specific to the Chehalis Basin. And Marie highlighted the differences between what she was finding in the research that she's conducted versus what we might have predicted if we just took data from a different system and plugged it in and went ahead and did our predictions as to what changes in flows might mean for Pacific lamprey within the Chehalis. The second theme, I think, is something to think about as we proceed with restoration, which is that the responses to restoration and how we think about it, scale is important. And this morning you've heard results that present information at different spatial scales. So for example, there are broad spatial footprints of that we need to think about. There are areas we could restore and have absolutely no impact on Chum, or very minimal. There are other areas we could restore and have minimal impact on spring Chinook salmon. We learned about the population structure of Chinook versus steelhead. I want to highlight steelhead here because we have very strong differentiation of steelhead in these sub-basins of the Chehalis River. That means there's not much genetic exchange between them, and that also means that those populations are maintaining the current diversity of the overall numbers that we're seeing returning to the river. And so restoration or impacts in one area of the basin won't necessarily have a number response, numerical response for population elsewhere for steelhead. At a different spatial scale, John Minkowski and also Andrew Claiborne's talked about upstream, downstream gradients, or at least that's my summary of what they talked about. And so thinking about, for example, John talked about these juvenile salmonid zones. If we are trying to create summer rearing habitat in an area where temperatures would never support summer rearing, that's not going to be helpful. But if we identify where that summer rearing is occurring, the temperatures that support it, those are the areas we're likely to get the biggest bang for the buck with respect to restoration. The other scale that we heard this morning is that there are some species where very specific local scale characteristics are important. So Amy Edwards talked about Chum salmon having high densities of spawning in particular types of spawning habitat. And then when questioned, she described some of the particular characteristics of the habitats that are supporting these high densities of Chum spawning. Spring Chinook salmon holding, again, very specific localized requirements, which would have a great impact on the overall numbers within the population. And finally, Marie Winkowski just explained that the rearing habitat requirements for Pacific lamprey in terms of the depth and velocity criteria are fairly narrow. And so, I think it was particularly the velocity criteria, if I remember correctly. Again, very specific type of habitat that's going to support that species. So we can think about diversity overall, but when we get down to thinking about individual species, there may be some very specific information or types of habitats that will be needed in specific areas. So I would be remiss with the organizers here to not remind you a few things before you head to lunch. So one is my plug that the study details that you've heard today are available on our website, and the presentations, which I imagine will become publicly available, all have the web links to those reports. And the second is all this information is collected not just unto itself. There's a point here that we're trying to inform restoration planning. Tomorrow is all about the restoration planning and all the work that folks have been doing to move that planning forward. We're going to talk about prioritization of areas. I just offered a few thoughts on the spatial scale aspects of that. We're looking for feedback on what has been currently planned. So if at all possible, please be there and please engage in that conversation. That's it.